What are you doing?
Water bottle.
You're not supposed to have water in here, Kirsty. Welcome to the podcast, by the way. This is the Casual Critic movie podcast.
There is no water inside.
There's no water in this studio whatsoever. So this week is just myself and Kirsty Bolingbroke from
Hello.
Casual Critic. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited for this week's podcast.
There's a lot for us to talk about and to get through. We're going to do it slightly differently on this podcast.
Because change is good.
Change is, and we should embrace
Unless you're in
change.
America right now.
Yes. Let's not talk.
That's not good change.
Kirsty's opinions are to herself. If you voted for Trump, that is entirely up to you. Right, let's do the podcast then. So coming up today, we're going to be talking about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find
oh,
Them.
Oh, yes.
That is our main movie review. That is what we're talking about the most on this podcast this week. We've got a lot to talk about with, I'm sure. What we're going to do, I want to tell you now. I want to get it out of the way just so that you're aware before we do it, Kirsty.
Okay.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to do my best to go against you on this film and tell you every reason I think it's bad.
At the end of this podcast, me and Ollie won't be friends.
Well, we hope that's not the case. I hope that's not the case. But I just want to, because I think it's going to be interesting if I just go against you with what you're saying.
It's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I'm not going to. If you're listening, by the way, I'm not going to purposely come in on every point and go, no, you're wrong. I won't be
doing
that.
He will. He will.
Okay, maybe.
I can see it. I can see it now. He's got that look in his eye where he's like, I'm going to cause some mischief today.
I'm in one of those moods today where I just feel like questioning everything. So we're going to do that. We're going to be talking about Fantastic Beasts, Where to Find Them. We're going to be talking about Cars, and that's all of Cars, not just Cars 3, but we had the release of the teaser trailer this week. We're going to talk about all the films. And also, we're going to be talking about your Throwback Thursday this week.
Yes, we've got the Whole Nine Yards, which is a very funny film, 1997, I believe.
1997.
Yeah,
I
and
was
it's got
young.
A. It's got a. I was three.
Okay, you were very young. I was just young.
It's got Matthew Perry and Bruce Willis in it. It's a great. It's hilarious. It's such a feel good film. So
Kirsty, because I've not seen it, Kirsty's only going to spend like 30 seconds talking about that. And
yeah,
then we'll
I'm
going
to give you a quick summary.
Yeah, it's great. Right. Anyway, we'll get onto that later. Welcome to the Casual Critic podcast. Let's go straight in then with this week's movie review.
This is the Casual Critic movie podcast.
So this week we went to go and see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the brand new first screenplay for J.K. Rowling. And I have to tell you, I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
It was. If you haven't read the review yet, it is over on casualcritic.co.uk. But I wrote it and I may have been a little bit biased. I did give it 5 stars.
You did.
But anyone who knows me knows I'm a massive Harry Potter fan. Absolutely love it. And Fantastic Beasts just delivered everything I could have hoped for in the movie.
Can I ask you a question?
It delivered. Go on then. Is this where you're going to play devil's advocate?
No, not
yet. It's lasted 10 seconds, people.
Not yet. I'm not going to do that yet. I just want to ask you some questions because
you're
a big Harry Potter fan.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of people listening, they're also big Harry Potter fans as well. What I want to know is, did you go into this film expecting something huge and in a way sort of be like, no matter what this film produced, you would be, it was great? Or did you go in sort of not
I was apprehensive.
Okay.
Because, well, I was actually excited as well. Because it's been, 4 years since we've had the last Harry Potter film. But for me, if you've read the book, which if you're a massive Harry Potter fan, you would have done, because it's been 10 years since the last Harry Potter book has been released.
Okay.
So, and then in 2009, she released the 3 spin-offs for comic relief, actually. That's why these books came about. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, other than the prologue at the beginning by Dumbledore, who introduces it and says this is Newt Scamander's diary of beasts and where he found them.
Right.
It is literally just an alphabetized list of creatures. There's no storyline.
Right.
So I was kind of excited because personally, for me, some of the films did not do the books justice. Naturally, you can't fit everything that's in a book into a film. But my sister, for example, she hasn't read the books but watched the films, and I've had to explain a lot to her because it just doesn't flow if you haven't read them.
I did. I watched the movies first, especially sort of the first one, and I've read the first one since. And there's so much more in the books than there is in the movie.
A lot of the issue as well is because of the ratings, some of the ratings that the films are, and some of how dark the books can be, they obviously had to downplay that a little bit. So I was kind of like apprehensive because I was like, how are they going to do this when there's no story? But also excited because I'm like, they can't ruin the book. For me, they could only bring... Some of these creatures are really hard to imagine. If you've seen the film, you're going to know what I mean. Like, reading about some of these creatures, it's really, really hard to picture, especially because some of them don't actually appear in any of the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
So you haven't got anything other than, I mean, I don't really have much of an imagination, to be honest.
Right, okay.
Like, I read a lot and stuff like that, but trying to conjure up stuff, I sort of use what I already know, yeah, like, around me. So I was excited to see how they were going to put it on the screen, but then I was also nervous because... It's like, what if it doesn't measure up to what I've imagined, even though I don't really have much of an imagination? So it's like, it was going to swing either way. It was either going to be amazing or it was going to be, it was all right, not as good as like the other ones. But for me, it delivered beyond belief. Like, I think I prefer it to any of the other Harry Potter movies.
Really?
I mean, it doesn't beat the books, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But movie-wise, it is definitely better than the 7 movies that were released.
Okay.
Genuinely, huge statement. See, look, I've made him speechless.
Well, because I kind of disagree. There's a lot of films that from the original 7 that I absolutely love and adore.
Yeah,
and
Goblet of Fire for me is my favourite one, and that's got a lot of the monsters and the creatures and stuff in it. But
that's my favourite one as well. But I don't know about this film. The thing I do love about this film is it's for all ages.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there is some darker bits in there that maybe the kids won't understand, but they can still follow what the plot and what's going on.
Yeah.
The monsters are brilliant.
So well. I saw it in 3D as well, and it just visually, this film is so stunning that I was like, I could watch it day after day and probably never get bored. Okay. I mean, I might get bored of the storyline, but actually watching the monsters and creatures, it was just like,
see, that's my issue with this film. Here comes Devil Advocate. I wouldn't watch this film again. I wouldn't watch it again anytime soon. I wouldn't go back and watch it again. I think because I know exactly what happens bit by bit, I just wouldn't watch it again.
I mean,
I'm not a big Harry Potter fan, though, so.
There is... Oh, this is where I'm going to lose my friendship with Ollie.
Go on, then. I know what I've got myself in for, so.
No, I think... So one of the issues I think the film has is there's too many narratives.
Okay.
There's far too many storylines going on. But as an origin story, because that's what it is technically, although we've got the Harry Potter world, this is completely separate from Hogwarts. Yeah. One, it's in America.
Yes, which is very confusing.
It's very confusing, especially if you are a lover of Harry Potter, because you have to get used to, there's a whole different system out there in America in terms of magic. So, I mean, you've got, I mentioned it in my review, America aren't really kind to wizards and witches and magic. They're all... godly. I mean, like, you've got the Salem witch trials and stuff like that, so they're not huge on magic, and that's kind of where this centres, doesn't it? Like, you've got the start, and you basically find out that the Nomad, which is the American for muggles, which they completely wreck, by the way, Eddie Redmayne completely goes, it just makes no sense.
It doesn't, but I think it's one of those, it's like, I think if you say Nomad, it's a bit more of like an offensive slur, but it's
it's like Nomad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're like a Nomad, but you're a Nomad.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like getting used to a whole different terminology and stuff like that. But basically, the muggles, or the nomadges, are fearful of witches and wizards. And you get introduced to this woman who is so anti-witchcraft. It's actually really scary, really, really scary. She will give your kid nightmares. So... It's kind of got that darker, sinister aspect, and you've got the whole wizards and witches versus like nomads, and you don't sort of get that in Harry Potter. So in the Harry Potter and the Hogwarts world in London, that because we're not accustomed to it, we're kind of invisible.
Yeah.
But there isn't a fear necessarily. So there's never, throughout the Harry Potter series, there isn't ever the muggles being scared, other than Dudley.
The muggle world and the wizarding world never really cross paths in the Harry Potter films, do they? Whereas in this, it's very much them two are together,
but one of them's hiding.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's trying to get used to, they're trying to hide them completely. So you don't get that. But then that's just one narrative.
So
that's one narrative. The other narrative you've got is with Newt Scamander, who is... Eddie Redmayne absolutely is fantastic in this. He has got Hufflepuff. Like, it's really hard because obviously you're so used to seeing Gryffindor and Slytherin, and there's two separate characters. Like, one's brave, one's... I don't want to say sly, but they're kind of sneaky, aren't they? Yeah. So they've got two very bold characteristics that you can pinpoint them. Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw don't necessarily have that throughout the Harry Potter movies.
Yep.
You see quite a bit of Ravenclaw. They're kind of like the smart ones, the sort of like... they're kind of like, they're quiet but smart at the same time. Hufflepuff, you don't really... Other than Cedric Diggory, there isn't really any more Hufflepuffs. sort of really...
There's no real play on any
emphasis,
Hufflepuff.
Is there?
Yeah.
And I mean, the one Hufflepuff they have, they killed. Sorry, spoiler if you haven't seen... if you haven't seen Goblet of Fire, then I don't know what you're doing listening to the Harry Potter podcast, but...
The only thing I'll say, they don't really mention Hufflepuff at all, though.
No, but
film.
You... That's the other thing. They want to distinguish it from Hogwarts.
Yeah, because it's in America.
Because it's in America, and they've got a whole different school there as well, so they don't have the same houses, which, do you know what? That's fine, because, like, we've had the Gryffindor, Slytherin, Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff narrative. We've had all of that house kind of competitions and the differences. We've all been on Pottermore and had ourselves sorted into them. We didn't need that again. I think if they brought that in again... It wouldn't have worked, especially in an American
system. Is it? So in the UK, you've got obviously our own system in terms of how we're educated, etc. It's the sort of same thing, but for the Wizarding World, where it's a completely different system.
It's like high school in America and secondary school here. Fundamentally, they are the same, but they are taught in completely different ways. Yeah. So I'm glad they didn't mention too much that he's a Hufflepuff. But you've got like
at
little,
all. It
you've
wasn't
got like no, but
all.
You've got like the little. He wears his Hufflepuff scarf and all of that. But also, it's the way he comes across. So he's very socially anxious. You'll notice Eddie Redmayne doesn't look anyone in the eye, which I thought as an actor that was fantastic kind of acting. Like he didn't, he played the socially nervous and awkward guy perfectly.
He did a great job at that. But my thing with Eddie Redmayne is he didn't really say very much in the entire film.
That's kind of the point.
His facial emotions are brilliant. He didn't really say anything.
And that's kind of the point, because that's what Hufflepuff is. They don't really try and make themselves known. So when you first see him, he's very like,
really?
Yeah, he's
I'm Hufflepuff.
I think they got
follow me
you
on
wrong.
Twitter at @Oliver_Ing. You see how I'm playing devil's advocate?
See, you're Ravenclaw. Right, I was a Gryffindor, but somehow as I've got older, I've turned into a Ravenclaw.
I think you do. I mean, obviously, your personality changes throughout, and that's what it's based on.
Yeah, and it's really nice to see someone who isn't... Because, I mean, Harry Potter, for example, he's bold and he's courageous, but he's a bit of a moany little git at times, isn't he? It's like, you just need to sort of get on with school. Yeah. And whereas you don't get that with Eddie Redmayne. Obviously, they're a lot older as well. There's no kids. Well, there are children. They're in the narrative, but they're not the main characters.
They're not a focus at all. It's very much more like an adult Harry Potter.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of like about it. We've had the teen angst and the teen drama, and we've had Voldemort. So, and also, what we have to remember is this is pre-Harry Potter. So this is a prequel. So this is actually set in 1920. Yeah. 1926, I believe. 24. It's in the 1920s. So it's a really fun time for America, actually, because you've got the Roaring Twenties, the Prohibition. This is where the history stuff for me comes into it. But then you've also... So you've got all of that still playing. You've got people having come back from World War One as well, like people getting on with their lives there. And then you've got... an Obscurus, which is what this film is about, tearing up New York City.
I love that there's all this destruction that happens in New York.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at it like, that's going to cost so much, especially in those days.
I know.
But it's brilliant. It's weird to see that no one's really questioning. I mean, obviously, we know what happens. I'm not going to spoil it as to what happens. But like at the time, they're like, no one really...
It's because they don't believe in magic.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Because they're so adamant that they don't exist, or they're very quick to blame it on witches. Interestingly as well, from a woman's point of view, I was like, don't blame the bloody wizards, do they? It's always the witches. Why has it got to be a woman?
Yeah.
So, but what's really interesting is, like I say, actually, one of the bad things is that there are too many narratives. So you've got the 1920s America being scared of witches and wizards. You've got Newt Scamander coming in as a Hufflepuff who has a briefcase, which I'm sure you will get from the trailer. It is full of beasts.
Yeah.
So you've got that into play because he's actually trying to set free one of his beasts and put them back into Arizona where they belong.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful creature, this one. So, but I don't want to ruin it.
No.
So you know that he's got a briefcase full of beasts and he's on that. So that's another narrative. And then you've got a whole separate one where you've got two of the main characters. You've got Tina and Queenie, who are sisters. One of them works for Makuza.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
This is a great part of the narrative.
It is good. She's a disgraced, in quotation marks, aura.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they've got four or five different narratives all running at the same time.
Yeah.
So for me, it's okay because... you kind of need it, because each one, although they're separate, they do blend together and they are completely necessary.
For me, it wasn't that. Like, I didn't find it too hard to follow, mainly because I've watched Game of Thrones where you got 22 billion narratives happening at the same time. But the way they do it in this film, to be fair to them, they've done a really good job, because it is really easy to follow.
It flows really nicely. Yeah. But I can imagine as a child, you might not necessarily follow all the individual narratives. Yeah. I reckon that, again, if I use this a lot, but if I took my brother to go see it, he'd probably just focus on the fact that there's a briefcase full of beasts. That is probably what he'd get out of it, and the scary Obscurus.
Yeah.
That is it.
Okay.
That is probably what he'd take from it. He wouldn't take anything else, which is why I think the film is so good, because it plays on everyone's kind of intellect.
Yeah. There is something for everyone in this film for them to go and enjoy.
And you can pick your bits. And also, I found that, I don't know about you, Ollie, but the sinister stuff was actually really chilling.
Yeah.
Like, I was scared at some point.
Yeah.
Whereas Voldemort, you kind of like, dude, you haven't got a nose.
<It's> like, is that how you viewed him? Like, you haven't got a nose, so therefore you're fine.
What makes it worse is, obviously, when I was reading the books, I conjured up this horrific, horrifying person.
Okay.
And then you get someone with no nose and just like, you're like, they're not really that scary at all.
I don't know, if you've watched the first film, The Philosopher's Stone, he's fairly scary, just be on the back of the head.
Yeah, but again...
Sorry, spoilers again.
Yeah, but again, you only see him for like, what, 20 minutes, don't you?
True.
It's just a quivering professor that you see for most of it. So, I was really chilled. And what I also liked was, you've got a bad wizard in it. And so you've got Grindelwald, who's in the background of this film, and that's another narrative, actually. Grindelwald, if you've read this,
anything about Grindelwald.
Well, you haven't read the books, have you?
No, not all of
them. So this is where some of the fan theories come in, and I really like one of them, which I'm going to share. So Grindelwald is this, he was this massive wizard in the 1920s and before, very, very powerful, but he liked to practice dark magic.
Yeah.
Now, we get introduced to him in the final book. And we are introduced to him when, and this is where Dumbledore comes into it as well.
Okay.
So you meet Dumbledore's brother, and he is talking to Ron, Hermione and Harry, and there's a picture of their sister on the wall.
Okay.
And it's basically revealed that his sister, when she was young, she was attacked by Muggle boys who had found her practicing magic, and it really scared her.
Okay.
So as a result of that, she repressed her magic. Now, this is quite important, because in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the whole film is about an Obscurus, which appears when children repress their magic, when they don't outwardly perform it. They feel like they create this like really toxic, really dark,
like
scary
black smoke, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's kind of weird, because it's not a thing, but they've managed to make it a thing without humanizing it, which I thought was a really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have this, and once they've done that, once they've created this Obscurus, it then attacks, and it's really random. It just attacks whenever, and it's destructive. Like I say, it can tear up New York City. That's what it does in this film. But they don't tend to last until past childhood.
Right.
So in the final book, you've got Albus's brother explaining that this is what happened to their sister, and then when you've seen this film, you're like, ah, she had an Obscurus, because that's basically the same definition. And Grindelwald, this wizard, is going around, this is what you find out again in Fantastic Beasts, trying to find these Obscurus, because when you collect them, like I say, they're so powerful, because it's all this repressed magic that it can just tear up whole cities.
Yeah.
So he's going around finding them. And in the seventh Harry Potter book, you find out that Dumbledore's sister died because she managed to be in an attack. She got a curse rebounded onto her when Albus, his brother, and Grindelwald were fighting.
Oh, okay.
So that's all the connection. So we think that Grindelwald was attracted to her because she had an Obscurus in her.
Right.
And then obviously we find out in the film that they can sort of last a lot longer than 10 years old. So
do you think that, because obviously we know there's 5 films lined up for this series.
Yes, and we know that a Dumbledore is going to be in it.
He's been confirmed to be in it. So do you think that we're going to have this plot from that
I think we're going to have some flashbacks, because one of my biggest criticisms with the final Harry Potter book and the final Harry Potter film is.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing, but some of the stuff is kind of really rushed.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, he's got a sister. Oh my God, she's died. Like, what?
Yeah.
So it's all, and then you explain, and then it explains why Dumbledore and his brother don't get on. So there's all these kind of plot twists and plot, like, things that they can go back to. But what you always have to remember, in the 1920s, Dumbledore wasn't a headmaster.
Yeah.
He was just a...
Was he a... teacher, professor?
He was a professor at Hogwarts, and that's what's explained in Fantastic Beasts as well. So Newt got expelled at one point, and Dumbledore was the one who, like, fought his case for him.
Yeah.
So that's how Dumbledore got brought into it. But the other thing I like, they don't mention him other than that.
No.
I like the fact they've left him in the Hogwarts world, but I think to carry this on, I reckon we will meet Dumbledore, because mm-hmm. obviously you've got Grindelwald in the background as well. They've yeah. thrown that in there. So what I like is you don't know what tangent they're going to go off on in yeah. the next five films, but there are so many possibilities they could go back on.
So this is very exciting to see what they make yeah. next. What I love is, I'm not going to mention the actor, but I love the character reveal, the actor
yes.
reveal as
yes.
to who plays
it's
Grindelwald.
And do you know what, the cast, right, so I do have another issue. I have an issue with Tina Goldstein.
You have an issue with this film?
I have an issue with Tina Goldstein.
Why?
Because she's very boring.
Which one's Tina Goldstein?
She's the disgraced Aura.
Okay.
She is. Compared to her sister Queenie,
yeah.
Queenie is amazing, and yeah. you've got Kowalski as well, who, if you've watched Frozen, is a bit like a human Olaf.
Yes, very much so.
Very much like a human Olaf. He's very sweet.
I like him a lot. He's yeah. He's a character that I can...
And he's a nomad as well. Yeah. So, like, obviously trying he's to brilliant. see the interplay between the nomad and all these beasts. It's yeah. just hilarious.
You feel very sorry for him, because you're almost like you want him to be a part of the same world that
yeah.
they're a part of, but you kind he obviously can't because he's nomad. But... I do agree with Tina Goldstein.
Yeah,
I do think that
she's
her character
very,
is not... I feel nothing for her. Like, that's the thing.
No.
I felt no connection with that character at all, whereas her sister, I did.
I felt a connection with Newt, because yeah. like, he's obviously someone we've never really seen in the Hogwarts world, or the Wizarding world, I should say.
Yeah.
So I felt a connection immediately with him. Queenie, fantastic, and she can read binds as well.
Yeah.
Which is also very cool, because you don't see that in the Wizarding world very often. And you've got Kowalski, and I think those three. You've also got Colin Farrell in there as well.
You have.
He's a very interesting character. We can't really say too much about them though,
no.
without spoiling. So all I'm going to say
yeah.
is that you've got so many big characters who have such. Even the small parts are a big part, I find.
Yeah.
And also you've got the creatures and the beasts, who are I've said in my review, every beast has its own personality.
Let's get on to the beasts in a second. Let's carry on with actors
compared to this, compared to all of them,
yeah.
Tina just goes straight into the background. For a main yeah. character, she did not...
I think she's essential for the role. I just don't feel like... I think she's
essential
quite...
to the storyline,
yeah.
but... I was like, you just need to cheer up.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just permanently depressed. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's good to have
just
a character
smile.
Like that once in a while in this film. I just don't know.
I think it's just because, I mean, if you put her in any other film, she probably would have been fantastic. But because yeah. there are so many other great, amazing actors.
Do you think just the actress, if we just change the actress of someone else, it might have been better?
No. I think her whole, the whole character.
Okay.
The way that they've done her, it's just like, and also, annoyingly, she's the only one that gets a backstory in it.
Yeah.
She's the only one you see a backstory for. You don't get anything from Queenie, you don't get anything from Kowalski, and you get nothing from Newt Scamander. It's
yeah.
like,
well, you get a bit on Kowalski as well, the fact that he just works in a canning factory.
Yeah, but as in, like, you got with Tina, you got her childhood.
Right,
like,
okay.
Do you see what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And you also got, like, yeah, I didn't like it. I was like, why give the boring character a backstory? But I suppose maybe it's because she's not interesting enough for it to carry on into, like, the next films, maybe.
Yeah, she might be left out of the next ones. We'll see.
I don't think she'll be left out. I think she'll still have to play a very
yeah.
prominent part, especially with the ending. But I wasn't overly impressed with her character. And I don't think it's the actress.
Okay.
I think the actress did okay for what she was given. But I think it's the role... She's just not really, compared to her sister,
yeah.
she's just not really fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Not really fun. And she's not even one of those interesting, boring people. Do you know what I mean? Like, when someone's meant to be boring, but you're kind of like, oh, they're okay.
Do you get the feeling, if you're listening, do you get the feeling Kirsty just finds her really boring?
I don't even want to give her the rest of my time.
Let's move on to the Beast.
Oh my God, the Beast.
And one we cannot forget, and we have to mention, and it's got to be the first one we mention, is the Niffler.
Oh, Niffler is amazing.
Unbelievable character.
If you've got a dog who is very naughty and mischievous, then they're Niffler. That is what Niffler is. Niffler reminds me of a house pet that wants his own way, and when he doesn't get his own way.
So if you mix a cat and a dog, their personalities together, you probably get a Niffler.
Yeah, so I can, if you've read the book, you'll obviously already know what they are, but Niffler is a bit like a magpie. He likes anything shiny and silver, so he has expensive taste, and will go around pickpocketing and all of this, but he just causes mischief, and actually it's his fault right at the start that Kowalski comes in, so we're going to have to thank him a little bit. But Niffler is a bit, the worst part is Niffler's very cute. I think he's a very cute character. He's like a little platypus.
That is exactly what it's like
with his beak and everything.
He's got like a kangaroo pocket where he stores all his silver and all his shiny objects.
And like, what's interesting about each of these beasts is none of them talk, yet they still have a personality. That's what I think is the best part of this film. Like, obviously Olaf, everyone fell in love with Olaf. I know it's only an animation, but he could talk and he could have that personality, whereas each of the creatures we were introduced to doesn't say a word, and it's just that interplay between them and Newt Scamander that you're just like,
I'm glad they don't talk. And it's like Fluffy in the first film of Harry Potter. He doesn't talk.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, you get something different from it.
Yeah.
So
it's nice to see a lot more beasts as well, because you only get like a handful of different animals and creatures in the Harry Potter film. So it's nice to see a bigger array.
And also,
you kind of only get
really like dragons and like the amazing creatures. Don't get me wrong, they are amazing, but you don't get to see any of the little ones so much. You get like their the pesky fairies and stuff like that, but you don't really get, and you get the creepy spiders.
Yes. Let's not talk about those.
No. and then, like you say, you get the Fluffy.
Yeah.
But you're,
I'm trying
really
desperately
kind of
to remember what the Hagrid's big bird is called.
What's it called?
Like a hippogriff, like a buttbeak that Hagrid has.
Which, if you've got Prisoner of Azkaban, is the main character on the front of the book.
Yeah.
That's the illustration.
It's a beautiful character. It's a beautiful beast, because it is part of the Beast family.
And that's what we get in the 7 Harry Potter films. We got all the fantastic, like, amazing, like, dragons. You get all of the phantasmical? That's a...
Fantastical. That's something else.
You get all of those beasts, so it's really nice to see some of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like one of my favourites is Bo Truckle.
Okay.
So he's the little green thing.
He's a bit like Groot.
Guardians of the Galaxy. He's very much like Groot, and I kind of feel like he's overshadowed a little bit, because if you've watched Guardians of the Galaxy, you know that. But he's an overly sensitive, very clingy Bo Truckle. But he's so cute.
He is, yeah.
Like, I'm probably going to say cute a lot in this podcast, by the way, so I can't think of any other synonym to describe them other than fantastic.
He is basically a stick insect that has a more of a human body than a stick insect has. But
What human body have you seen like that?
In the shape of a human body.
Oh, okay.
He has got arms and legs, but he hasn't got a proper torso. I'm not talking about a torso or a big, like, round head. But he's a really cool character, and I like him because there is a trade deal that sort of happens in this film, and he's used as a sort of plot point for one of the trades that happens.
Yeah.
But I won't, again, spoil it, because you need to go and watch this film. Anything else on the Beast to mention?
The demi-guys.
Who were they?
He was the sloth-like one that's invisible.
Oh, him was brilliant.
He was amazing. So what was really funny is, like, obviously, like I said, one of the narratives is Eddie Redmayne has got this case full of beasts, and it spills out. And they've got to try and collect. It's a bit like Pokemon Go, actually, but Fantastic Beast version, because they've all spilled out and he's got to try and find them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a bit like Pokemon Go. So he's going around trying to find these beasts, but one of them's invisible.
It's really hard for him to track him down.
It's so hard. And then honestly, it's just so funny because they find him in a shop of all things, and it's like the whole interplay after that is just amazing. And but he's like a little sloth.
Yeah,
he's like a grey.
I can see
fat sloth.
I can see him doing really well in shops this Christmas for toys.
Oh,
for
my
kids.
Goodness. Yeah, but I haven't seen any because I want one.
Yeah.
Mitch, if you're listening, I want one. So they've got another one, which is the, it's called the Okami.
Yeah.
Which is like, that is probably the most beautiful one. That is the one where it goes really, really big. Yeah, yeah, that's not the one that's being released to Arizona.
No, no.
This is another one.
Right.
The one which involves a teapot, and that's all I'm going to say.
Yes. Oh, yes.
How visually stunning was that one?
Absolutely. And I love the way Eddie Redmayne just comes up with this whole different plan and is like, get a teapot.
It makes absolutely no sense. It's like, we need a bug and a teapot.
Yeah. But it makes it, I mean, when you're watching
it,
it's brilliant.
Yeah, in the end, it all comes together, but we don't really want to spoil it. But visually, the Okami is probably my favourite one to look at.
Yeah, very much so.
That's stunning.
It's good. You need to go and watch this film. Go and read the review online.
Yeah, review, go watch it. Go watch it again.
And then read the review again if you want to. Why not?
Give it 5 stars like I did.
For more movie news, trailers and reviews, visit casualcritic.co.uk.
Okay, let's move on to our next section then. We're going to talk about Cars because this week, released by Disney, brilliantly, is the brand new teaser trailer for Cars 3, which is due out next year.
Yes.
I am very excited for Cars 3.
We all are. We all are. Just, Cars 2 was a massive letdown.
Let's talk about Cars 1 first because let's do it in the right order that I think this film deserves. Yeah. This film franchise deserves, anyway. Cars 1, an amazing film. Yeah. It's all about racing.
It's my favourite, probably my favourite Pixar movie.
Yeah, it's mine,
100%
actually.
My favourite Pixar movie.
Although, I don't know, my favourite Pixar.
Not out of the whole Disney.
No, because Big Hero 6 isn't Pixar, and that's one of my favourites as well.
And Wreck-It Ralph isn't Pixar either, that's Disney.
There's just so many good films from
Disney. Yeah, that's but it's definitely my favourite Pixar. It beats Toy Story hands down.
Just to clarify, Wreck-It Ralph is Disney, it's not Pixar.
So it beats Cars for me, beats Toy Story, beats Finding Nemo.
Yeah. It's just one of those, it's a feel good film. It's just, you watch it and you come out of what, and you like, you finish watching it and like, that was such a good film.
You watch it again and again. If you like me, I've watched it. There was a phase where I got my little brother into it, and he was only 4 at the time.
Right.
And you know how 4-year-olds, you might not know, but 4-year-olds like to watch the same thing over and over again. If any of you've got children or younger siblings, you will know that if there's something on CBBC or Disney, Playhouse Disney, it doesn't matter how many repeats there are, they will watch it and be fascinated. So every night for a good 2 months, he loved Cars and we would watch it every night. It's actually, it reminds me of me doing my A-levels.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
Because he would put it, and I was happy for him to put it on because I was like, I could have that on in the background. I know exactly what's coming up next. I don't need to pay attention to it. But it's just such a good film.
I love it because it's all about the car, which basically is played by Owen Wilson.
It is about cars.
It is about cars.
It's not about cakes like this Great British Bake Off segment would be.
This is true. So Lightning McQueen is essentially the main character. Yeah. Basically, he's a brand new sort of
He's a
rookie. He's new to the game.
But he's a bit big-headed.
Very big-headed. But then he goes on this sort of path and he learns about life a bit more.
And he
meets some new
friends. Douchebag.
Yeah, and basically it ends up in Radiator Springs, which is just a fantastic plotline. You need to go and watch this film. If you haven't watched this film, you need to go and watch it. And I'm sure
you're
probably
not going to really understand what we're talking about if you haven't seen it.
The second film came out after, and there was a lot of expectation because of how good the first one was, and it was such a great film. It is a lot of people, it still is a lot of people's favourite animated movie. And then the second one came out and you expect, oh, what can they do that's better? And they basically, what they do, they take the original movie
and
they completely tear it up, throw it in the bin, and have
like
a big old poo.
It's like the writers have gone, this is Cars 1, it did really, really well at the box office, let's just throw it out the window and start again.
Let's just see what happens.
No, Pixar, you got it wrong. And to be fair though, Cars 2 was at a time when Pixar sequels just didn't do well.
They didn't really have any other sequels. Well, I guess Toy Story
2, but I love Toy Story 2 actually. Prefer that to the original. No, there's got to be other sequels because I think Finding Dory was the one that broke the trend of really poor sequels.
You've mentioned
Monsters
before,
University.
Yeah.
That was
that
awful.
I think you're wrong there because I really enjoy that film. It's not
compared
a great
to the
film.
First one though.
Oh no, it's not
like Cars 2 again. Yeah. My brother enjoyed, but I was like, compared to the first one, this is rubbish.
Yeah, but I really really enjoyed Monsters University, and I generally have watched that a few times because I quite enjoy it.
I've got it on DVD and it's still in cellophane.
Oh, you've not actually watched it?
Oh, I have seen it. I saw it in cinema.
No, as
in
you've not brought it.
Yeah, that's okay. That's the thing, because I'm like...
Fair enough. But then that's the sort of same for number two of Cars, which is just they took a completely... So it's all about a car that races, and then suddenly it's all about a car that's suddenly
a
part
spy.
Of a spy agency.
To be fair, I thought, because the main character is Mater, who is my favourite character in the first one, I was like, yes, Mater gets his own story. This would be fantastic. And I, honestly, the poor guy.
it just didn't
do it justice. I mean, on paper, it looks good.
Yeah.
Like, he's a car turned spy, mistaken. And if you've watched the first one, you know that it's completely a Mater storyline.
I'm sure little boys watching this loved it as well, because that's kind of who they're aiming at, aren't they? It's like kids kind of want to be spies,
like,
and they
said,
love that.
My brother, he was six when it came out, I believe, five or six, and he absolutely loved it. And I was like, I'm not taking you to the cinema for a second time to go see it, because it was awful.
So, you are a good sister.
I'm a good sister for taking him in the first place.
Exactly. Anyway, so the third movie is coming out next year. They are giving it another sequel, and it does deserve a sequel. It didn't do it justice, did it?
The second one didn't. No.
So what I'm hoping is that this is the sequel that we wanted initially. And the directors have already said, we've got other news. If you just search for Cars on our website, you'll see that the director is doing his best to bring it back to what it means. And this teaser, sort of, it really stands out that...
It does. And I think
what they've
realised with Finding Dory is... you need to kind of cater it for the adults too.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, it's aimed at kids, great, but the kids aren't going to go to the cinema without an adult, and they're not going to buy the DVD if they don't enjoy it, because they're not going to subject themselves to watching it over and over again if they don't enjoy it. And I think that's why Finding Dory kind of broke that barrier, because we were sort of talking on the podcast a few weeks ago that it did have something for everyone. The kids may not have understood it, but it didn't matter because... You know, the kids aren't going to understand most things. And I think that's what they're doing with Cars 2. When you see how dark sort of the trailer is.
Yeah.
Like, if I showed my brother this teaser trailer, he'd be like, what? He wouldn't really have a clue what's going on. But as adults, we can appreciate and be like, we sort of know where this is going to go.
Yeah.
Which makes it a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Pixar have now learnt. So fingers crossed, with Incredibles as well, they're going to start going more towards that direction rather than the, let's just think of the most ridiculous storyline and put it in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. The third one is that it's going to be the sequel that it deserved. It's going to be following, again, racing back to what we love. And the same thing, they can learn from Planes. Planes is a very similar film to Cars. It's a very good film.
It's the same writers and same director. Believe,
it is. It's just not Pixar.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Planes
is brilliant.
2.
No, Planes 2 is brilliant.
Oh,
I love Planes 2.
I didn't mind Planes 2.
No,
Planes,
it's great.
The first Planes was quite good.
It's, again, they've changed, but then they've done it in a different way where they've actually gone, no, we are still racing, but something happens to stop that racing, so we need to sort that out. And that's kind of...
I feel like Planes, though, was like, you know when you've got Lego and you've got Playmobil Lego?
Yeah.
I feel like Planes was the Playmobil of Cars. I honestly feel like it catered for a much younger audience than it needed to.
Do you know the original premise of Planes?
No.
It's supposed to be Trains. And Disney went, no, let's do Planes.
Oh, no, because, you know, no one's ever had done anything with trains before.
Well,
Thomas the Tank Engine doesn't exist with the Fat Controller and Percy. Oh, no, that's not original at all, is it? Pixar, what are you doing?
Well, they changed it because
it was stupid.
Well, okay. So, anyway, I wanted to do something with you on the podcast. We don't do this very often. Well, I thought we'll both have a go at this.
Okay.
I've got a quiz. It's what car from Cars are you? So it's like a personality test.
Okay.
So your favourite character is Mater.
Mater, as in Terminator, without the T.
Out of all the cars in Cars,
Mater is my
favourite. You'd want to be,
I'd want to be Mater, actually.
No, would you consider yourself close to Mater personality-wise?
He's quite clumsy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 and he attracts trouble as well, doesn't he?
Okay, so I'll ask you the question then. If you were to medal in an Olympic sport, would you want to be in... Which sport would you want to be in? Would you be in archery, figure skating, swimming, ski jumping, beach volleyball, ice hockey, rhythmic gymnastics, or badminton? Which are those?
See, that's interesting, because that's really hard, because I've got my hobbies... So I would say ice hockey.
Ice hockey, okay.
Because I absolutely love watching ice hockey.
Well, for me, it would be badminton. So yeah. I've clicked badminton. Yeah. The next one is my travel style could be described as low-key and low-stress, spontaneous, luxurious, methodological. Was that right?
Yeah, methodological.
Slow and steady, wild, go with the flow, or I just want to go to Italy. which one?
I think mine's probably methodological. Oh, no, I don't know. Oh, I don't know that one. That's quite hard.
I'm going to go with, I reckon I'm going to go with the flow, I reckon.
Yeah, I'd probably go with the flow as
go
well.
Go with the flow? Okay. Yeah. Your dream car is anything with wheels, a sports car, something practical and kind of roomy, Italian models only, please, vintage all the way, race car, why not, low riding convertible, or does bicycle count?
I'm not going to lie, I know nothing about cars, so I'm just going to go with anything with wheels.
Anything with wheels, yeah. Okay. I'm going to put, this is a hard one, I'm going to go race car, why not? I'd love a race car. During summer, you
it's
can find me.
It's not practical, though, is it?
It's true. Where can you find you in the summer? Are you by the pool? Are you reading as much as possible? Are you travelling, shopping, probably getting gorgeously tanned, sleeping, picking dandelions, or going to lots of movies?
It'd be... Oh, that's hard. It's that reading is. Or movies.
I know.
What is it?
I thought about those two.
Oh, no.
Which one's it going to be? To be fair, during the summer, would you be going to lots of movies?
Yeah.
Okay, you would. But this is true.
I'd probably say I'd read more, though, because money-wise, reading's a lot cheaper than going
to this. So would you read it?
So, yeah, I'd say just say put reading, yeah.
Okay, I'll put I'm going to the movies, because that's generally what I do. All right, last question for you, then. The best word to describe myself is loyal, adventurous, optimistic, funny, creative, whimsical, serious, or energetic. What would you describe yourself as?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how I would describe myself.
I'm going to put adventurous, because you said adventure earlier.
Yeah, I'm like the least adventurous person.
I've hit it now.
Maybe
that's a shame.
Whimsical.
Whimsical. Okay, yeah. That's a shame because I've already hit the button. I'm going to put funny. I reckon I'm funny. Do you know what? out of those two tests, who do you think you got?
I don't know. Probably the girl.
No, we both got Lightning McQueen. Both of us got Lightning McQueen, so there you go.
I don't think this is a very good test.
No,
we're both big-headed and selfish. That's
brilliant.
The conclusion.
Yeah, I think there's too many questions on that one. Right, well done. So that is
our
quiz.
We don't do
quiz.
This often, and the first time we've done it, it's not very good. Well, gone in our favour.
I'm going to be honest, probably not going to do that one again.
For more movie news, trailers and reviews, visit casualcritic.co.uk.
Right, let's do this week's Throwback Thursday then, which we are covering. What is it, Kirsty? You're the
it
writer
is
of this.
The whole nine yards. I said at the start of this podcast it was 1997, but it's actually the year 2000.
Okay, so that's fine. It's only 3 years out.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
as long as it wasn't like you said, you didn't say like 1956, and then actually it was yesterday.
No, if it was 1956, I don't think Matthew Perry and Bruce Willis would have been starring in it.
Well, I don't know. How old are they?
I don't think. I think they're like 50, aren't they? They would have been way too young.
Do you know that?
Told you at the end of this podcast, people, me and Ollie are not going to be friends.
Okay, so it's in 2000, set then. Tell me a bit about it.
Okay, so we have got Bruce Willis, who plays Jimmy the Tulip Tudeschi, and he is a contract killer.
Okay.
Who moves to Canada, which is where Matthew Perry is. He is a dentist. I will say this now, Matthew Perry is Chandler and Friends, and he plays the exact same character, which isn't a bad thing, because it's a comedy. It's not a bad thing. He's not as silly as Chandler, but...
Okay, do you know what? I'm going to be all right with this, because if you look at someone like Neil Patrick Harris, who pretty much plays Barney and everything...
Except for Beasley. He doesn't play the same character. But yeah, so it's kind of like, he plays a very... There's not much difference, but you know what?
Yeah.
You kind of love that, like, love Chandler, so...
I guess if you're already loving him from Friends, you're going to want to see the same
exactly.
thing.
Yeah, so exactly. He just plays the over-attentive, kind of like a scaredy cat, essentially, with a bit of sarcasm in there, too. You've got him who's next door. He's a dentist. He's very scared, and he finds out, obviously, a contract killer is next door.
Yeah.
He's got a wife who doesn't love him.
Okay.
Honestly, the film is hilarious, but ridiculous at the same time.
Right.
So you've got a wife who doesn't love him, and then you find out that Bruce Willis's character, there is a bounty on his head because he's killed a brother and, you know, the whole revenge thing. So the wife goes, Chandler, I keep calling him Chandler.
You can't keep calling him Chandler because that's not his name.
I don't even know what his
name is.
Hang on, no, that's not. So Nicholas is Matthew Perry's character.
Right, okay.
The review on Casual Critic is so much better than what I'm giving it.
You're really selling this to me. I just want to say.
Okay, so Matthew Perry's character.
Yeah.
He wants a divorce because obviously his wife doesn't love him, and but she won't give him one because he's currently paying off her father's debt.
Okay.
So as soon as she gets divorced, she then have to pay it, and she's very selfish, and you just hate her in this.
Right.
So she basically says, look, if you go to Chicago and tell them where Jimmy the Tulip is, I will grant you your divorce, because basically they will get a finder's fee.
Right.
He gets roped into this huge drama with like lots of twists and turns, actually. There's a lot of plot twists in it that you don't really see coming, and it does make you laugh. But yeah, so that's what the whole story is. He goes to Chicago to say, look, I found Jimmy the Tulip Tedeschi, can I have a finder's fee? And then from there, it's this huge adventure. Like, it's like your typical 90s comedy, actually. There isn't much substance to it, don't get me wrong. It's not an amazing storyline, but it has got some nice little funny plot twists. Bruce Willis plays a character kind of similar to in Die Hard, but a lot more comical.
Okay.
So obviously he's a contract killer.
Yeah.
So he's got that kind of scary... But he's a contract killer who loves cooking and cleaning, and he's very domesticated. So you've got that kind of interplay in the character. That's quite funny.
Okay.
And it's the fact that contract killing in it is so like mundane. It's not seen as such a... They downplay it, which makes it hilarious. It's like, oh, you know, I've killed like 8 people, and it's just like, oh, go you, well done. I don't, because obviously, Ollie, you've not seen it, so we can't really say much about it without ruining it.
Okay.
But the whole
you can tell me some bit. I'm not too bothered, but it's people who are listening.
Yeah,
who haven't seen
I don't think it's very underrated, because, like I say, it's not one that did well at the box office.
Right.
But it's one of those comical ones. I mean, it's on Amazon Prime, so if you've got it, go take a watch. It's about an hour and a half, and it's genuinely one of those films where you can just be like, haha, that was a good laugh. it's like that kind of film. I mean, I have only given it 3 stars.
Okay.
But that is just because the storyline's so ridiculous.
Right. Is it a plausible storyline?
Yeah, it's plausible. Well-ish. But it doesn't try to be something it's not. It doesn't try to be this amazing film with this great, grand storyline. So it is what it is. It's just a comedy.
It's just a
comedic film that if you're looking for something really easy to watch,
maybe you're
pottering about in the house. Maybe your mind isn't switched on. Your mind does not need to be switched on for this movie. Yeah. That's sort of what I like. And obviously, the last couple of weeks, I've just been like, I'm so tired. I don't want a film that I have to watch intently.
Yeah.
To see, to understand. So you don't need to have a brain to watch this film either.
Yeah.
Like, it is, honestly, it's just such an easygoing comedy film. You've got obviously Matthew Perry playing the same sort of character, but watch it for Bruce Willis.
Okay.
He plays a different character. I mean, I know I said it's similar to Die Hard, but because he's kind of like enjoying the domesticated side of things, it's quite funny.
Okay. So it's just one to watch that maybe just
one
pop
to
on
watch
the background.
One, yeah, pop
not,
it on in the background.
Not take too seriously.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily go out. I mean, I enjoy it because there's a sequel to it, The Whole 10 Yards. I would go out and buy them on DVD. But that's just because it's so different to my other film taste. But it's not one really that if it came out and I was old enough, I wouldn't have gone to see in cinema. It's sort of like, you don't see very many of them actually nowadays.
As in comedy?
Just plain simple comedies that isn't trying to sell at the box office or anything like that. It's just
but
nice
then maybe
and
like there's not many of them because you say this one hasn't done very well at the box office.
No, and that's
so.
And that's precisely you're completely right. But you know, like how comedies nowadays, it's all got to have kind of sarcasm, and
it's got to be really stupid humor.
Yeah, you've got like the spoofs, haven't you? Or you've got like sarcasm, witty. There is wittiness in there because like I say, Matthew Perry is playing Chandler, so there is witty comebacks and things like that. But it's kind of more, it reminds me of the old Adam Sandler movies.
Okay.
But without the stupid humour.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of
rage.
It reminds me of the days of like Happy Gilmore, although there is quite a lot of rage in that.
There's
and
a
like
lot in that.
And Big Daddy. It's like those kind of and
Billy Madison.
Billy Madison. It reminds me of those sort of films, like the typical like late 90s, yeah, early 2000 comedies. So
okay,
yeah, it's so one to watch if you
stars.
Haven't seen it. Just three stars. It's probably one of my lower Throwback Thursdays.
Right,
but
still
because,
one to go and watch that.
Yeah, definitely one to just, like I say, it's on Prime, Amazon Prime, if you've got it.
Yeah.
And it's so cheap to source as well. If you like the sound of it, it's so cheap to actually rent or buy.
Yeah.
That yeah, it's definitely worth getting.
Go and check it out. Right, mm-hmm. So go and read the review online right now at casualcritic.co.uk and go and check out the movie if you've got Amazon Prime, or go and buy it.
Definitely.
Brilliant. Thank you.
This is the Casual Critic Movie Podcast.
And that concludes this week's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. That's been a fun podcast.
It has.
We've
just
had
the two of us.
Ups and downs. We've had our ups where we've been talking about, obviously, cars, and we had our personality test, and we've done the amazing review for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And we had our downs where I questioned you on everything that you said.
Yeah, so me and Ollie aren't friends now. That's what's come from this podcast. It's destroyed a friendship.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good for, it's all for entertainment. It's not serious. It's fine. I was only being serious when
I said. He's just done it all in quotation marks, people, so yeah. I'm not sure how. What I should take from this.
Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for downloading our podcast. Remember to hit the subscribe button, and it will be in your phone every time we release one.
Mm-hmm.
Our next podcast will be out soon. Thank you very much to Express FM at the University of Portsmouth for letting us use their studios. We'll be back shortly with our next podcast, and Umby should be back on the next one as well.
He's just
on a train today that I understand, so he can make it, but that's not a problem. So we'll see you soon. Thank you very much, and remember to read all of our reviews and everything that we put on at casualcritic.co.uk. We'll see you next time.
Bye
bye.